From Duval, Washington, it's the 407 Cast. Here's your host, RSD Superintendent, Dr. Susan Leach.
Hello, and welcome to the 407 Cast, your window into the dynamic world of education in the Riverview School District, where we discuss our achievements, the challenges we face, and the innovative ways we are accelerating learning, and we're excited you chose to listen in. Hello, and welcome to the 407 Cast. I'm excited about today's guest. He is someone fairly new to the district, joined us over the summer. Welcome, Steve Mills, Director of Transportation.
Thank you, Dr. Leach. It's good to be here. Looking forward to the conversation today.
As I was preparing for this, I was thinking of the different paths that we can go down with this topic, and I have so many that I want to cover. So let's just jump right in. Transportation has been really well done in Riverview. We're not without our challenges, but when I talk to my colleagues in surrounding districts and even other districts around the country where districts are regularly canceling multiple routes every day due to driver shortages, we have managed to mostly, not 100% of the time, but mostly avoid that. Could you talk to me a little bit about what's causing this phenomenon around the country?
The driver shortage is all over. The entire country is dealing with this. I think there's a variety of things. One being the demands that it takes to drive a bus right now. It takes a unique person with a unique schedule to be able to deal with bus transportation because, you know, you got your morning, then you got your afternoon or PM routes, and then you've got this middle of the day what you do with. So in many respects, it's well suited to someone who has a schedule that can accommodate that. So oftentimes we find that someone who has that kind of ability that can work with their student's schedule works well. Also, we find those who are maybe towards retirement or early retirement or retirement, it works well for them, and they do it for different reasons. But that seems to be who we tend to get. I think pay becomes an issue for some. I mean, the cost of takes to live and what we can afford to pay for transportation. I think another challenge is increasingly the demand. And I would say I've noticed that in the short time I've been here, it's strenuous. It's stressful, and there's increasing demands on that. There's also, I think, an awareness that there's a pretty high degree of liability that a driver faces because you're on wheels. It's a classroom on wheels, and you got all that stuff to deal with. Those would be the bigger ones.
I think one of the things that a lot of people don't always realize is that driving a school bus requires a CDL. Then when you start comparing the wages for someone with a CDL and what they can make in other venues, the job starts looking less attractive. So they bring students to school in the morning, and then they just have a break in their day until it's time to pick them up again.
Right.
And so they're just not for everyone.
That's exactly right. Most of our drivers, they get to the building, the transportation center, around 6 to 6:30, the first routes start. In the inclement weather times, it's not uncommon that we'll have drivers arriving at 5 o'clock to start getting their buses ready and whatever ready to go. Most of our drivers, they'll either be a two-run or a three-run route, which means a three-run route, they're doing a high school, a middle school, and an elementary. Elementary route. If they're a two-run route, oftentimes they're doing a middle school and an elementary. Occasionally, we'll have a driver with a two-run route that will do a high school and then an elementary, and then they'll have a break in the middle. Typically, we try to build most of the routes so that they have three runs in them just to facilitate all that.
Is that considered a full-time position?
Yes, it is union-based, so they bid the routes based on seniority. Full-time would be whatever that bid is. And most of them are at least 20 hours or more. We would consider those full-time route drivers. We have a number of the routes that are built out to 7 and 8 hours a day. Some of them, because of the nature of the routes, are going to be closer to, probably the shortest one would be maybe 6.
I know there are opportunities for additional work. If there is anyone listening that may be thinking, I wonder if I could do this, what would those opportunities be for additional work outside of the routes that they bid?
So the other option, and again, it is by bid. drivers based on seniority. They can put their name down for sports and activity trips. And we have some drivers that are route drivers, but actually really like trips. And so when they take a trip, a sub has to fill in for their position, which is why we need so many subs. And of course, this time of the year, there's so many trips that go out. We have days when we have 5 or 6 or 7 route drivers that are taking trips. And then we need subs to fill those positions because the routes have to be filled first. You know, if we don't fill the trips or can't fill them, then we have to think in terms of chartering. And that's usually fairly costly for schools because that falls back on the schools to do that. We try to take those on as much as we can to help with the cost.
There's only a certain number of hours that they can drive, correct, in a day.
We've actually had a little bit of that happening where the driver comes back off a trip, say at 11 or midnight or whatever the case is, they need an 8-hour break. Mm-hmm. So that means that they can't do their AM route. So then we need a sub for that. The regulations on that, it's drive time. We really do try to kind of honor the 8-hour. Fortunately, most of our trips are not going that late.
I think there are so many moving parts to this work that people would never realize.
You're constantly triaging what's going on. So at the very moment that you're trying to figure out, is a driver coming in, or 30 minutes before a route starts, the driver calls in and says, I can't be there. So now you're scrambling. How do you find a sub in 30 minutes to fill a route? And then while that's going on, you end up with, now you've got buses that are maybe already out there. Student didn't show up. The parents are following the bus, trying to get the kid on the bus and all those kind of things that are taking place. So, and how you respond to that, there's just all kinds of things that are happening. But you're always triaging. What do I need to do?
One of the things that I think about that overwhelms me is when you have to rework the routes.
Oh, yeah.
So somebody new moves in and you've got to add a new stop.
Well, I think we added, as an example, we added about 12 students on 2 routes right around the first of this year, coming out of Christmas, the holidays. And so every one of those, for the most part, means that there's some rerouting that takes place. Fortunately, our computer system gives us the ability to help do that, but there's still lots of moving parts and you have to make sure it's all right. And you move one student and it changes the entire route. In some cases, 2 or 3 minutes or 5 minutes for a student. Of course, that's a big deal because we ask parents to be at the stop or students to be at the stop 5 minutes before the bus should be there. Well, if you've all of a sudden adjusted that by 5 minutes, it changes a family's entire morning schedule in some cases. If you don't get that all communicated out or put into the system right, all of a sudden somebody missed their bus. Now we got all that to deal with.
This year, we started using the Stop Finder app.
Yes.
So parents have an app to see where the bus is in real time. If you update the routes, do parents get notified through that app?
The software is really very powerful. It's very flexible. It's like I've kind of told the people, we've purchased a beast and it takes a lot of food to feed the beast.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of work to just keep it accurate. And so every time we make a change, we have to make sure that that information is changed right. We have to be in the right database. We have to be in the right bus. If it's a route that we're dealing with, you have to make sure that there's all those little pieces. Like we were just dealing with the snow and ice. So if we do a 2-hour delay start, we can go into the system and we can set it to do a 2-hour delay. And if we need to do a early Friday release, we could change both ends of the system. And not that we would, but we could make it a 2-hour delay and a 90-minute early release day. It takes probably 15 to 20 minutes to change that in the system. It can be visible in person Stop Finder app within 15 minutes. Sometimes it'll happen within minutes. And we will also use the Stop Finder message and send out a message. Mm. And we can tailor the messages to the entire route, anybody that's riding a bus, or we can change it to just a handful of stops. If we do make those changes and it's fairly quick, we'll send out a message in their Stop Finder. In the Stop Finder app, parents can actually see exactly where the bus is at on their route during their route time. And they can also see what time the change or whatever's going on if we made the change in the system. So we try to accommodate that, both of those angles, whichever way seems to be the most efficient. Announcements usually are the fastest. Changing the route sometimes will take 10 or 15 minutes to make the change. But it is a really nice tool for parents to use.
When the weather is bad, I often watch social media because I want to see what people are saying. Are there things we can address? Are there things we didn't think of that people are spinning about? A few weeks ago, somebody said, I don't understand why they're closing the buses have chains. They have chains and sand. Can you talk about how that works?
Yeah, they're automatic chains and sanders. I mean, we can go in pretty slick roads. I mean, obviously, we're concerned about safety, even with chains. Chains don't help you in ice at all. Sand might help you a bit. But if they're going up a slick place, which we had drivers using chains, I don't think we had anybody using sand this time, but we had drivers using chains. They have to be 35 miles an hour or less to use them. So, I mean,
go on the fly,
So they actually drop down beside the tire, and think of it as a fan of chains. They just spin and spin underneath the bus tire as it drives. And so the chain is just always under the tires. Mm-hmm. And then when they're done, they just push the button and the chains come up and it's out of the way.
And what about the sand? The
sand is the same. It's just a button and it disperses sand in front of the tires. It gives it the ability to move. Yeah. Really, the buses have a pretty good ability to travel in bad or slick roads.
One of the things that is becoming more in vogue around the country, and it's something I get asked about, is why we don't purchase and use electric buses. I know there are a few reasons why we're not, but you might be better position to speak to that.
I actually was talking about this with someone at the state office. The challenges that we have here partially is just, do we have the infrastructure to be able to do it, number one. But I think another bigger issue is the capacity or the capability that EV buses, or the limitations that EV buses have, is probably a better way to say it. So for example, many of our routes are a single route. A single run could be as long as an hour. The EV buses are charged will only last 90 minutes. So if I have a bus that has 3 hours to do in a morning run, running route, I would have to have charging stations and multiple buses in order to make that work, because it would take, even if I have the fast chargers, it still wouldn't give me enough capacity to stop and charge them fast enough to continue the rest of the run in that morning. If all we had was electric buses, I'd probably have a fleet of 2 to 3 times bigger than we have in order to make it work, because you have to give them time to charge. And there's nothing you really can do about it. I mean, it just takes so much time to charge a battery. And even with fast chargers, it takes longer. 90 minutes is not very good. In areas like ours, there's not been good results with electric buses. There's a district that has an electric bus that has been in the shop and not used. They've had it out a couple of times and towed it back every time because it just doesn't work. That doesn't mean that the technology won't eventually get there, but at the moment, it's not for us. It doesn't fit our scheme, and yet we'll do a study, which I'm scheduling to do.
So we are evaluating.
We'll have the PSE come out and do an evaluation and tell us kind of what our grid looks like and what our capabilities and capacity are.
Thank you. I appreciate that, because I think it's something that many in our community wonder about, and it's a more complex topic. One of the biggest reasons that I either hear from you or maybe in conversations with you is around behavior on the buses. Could you talk a little bit about what you're seeing?
We try to keep the rules on the bus pretty basic. It's essentially stay in your seat, voice level 2, basically like you speak just in common everyday language, have tone and volume. Don't get out of your seat walking around on the bus while the bus is moving. Don't be throwing things, you know, not eating stuff on the bus. So just some pretty general. We only have 4 or 5, and the drivers, we give them some latitude as to what that is, but it's going to be pretty consistent across the board. I think increasingly the challenge with this is issues that affect the safety of the bus. And what I mean by that is that it's safety in terms of, if it's distracting to the driver, it's affecting the entire safety of the bus. Others is safety issues as it reflects towards other students, inappropriate behaviors, and the challenges that come with that. And what does that mean? And so how do you navigate that? How do you do it appropriately? How do you do it so that mom and dad can be engaged in the process and with the school and all that? So they're challenges. They're difficult. It's a concern. We're very intentionally trying to work with the drivers, some of which know how to manage their bus better, which is a significant part of what we have to do. And probably, kind of a side note, training how to manage student issues on the bus. We're going to have to do that somewhere in this more so. We take the drivers in and we spend time. All the buses have cameras. So we review with the drivers what's going on the bus. And we encourage, particularly for elementary and middle school, that they have a seating chart. It tends to help a little bit on the management side of the bus. It also helps us to know, if we're watching video, who's sitting in what seat. With drivers, we'll sit down, we'll watch video, my student management liaison, work through this stuff, work with the schools, work with the driver. I ride the bus. I have other sub drivers that have been long term. They know what to do. They've done good management. I have them ride with the drivers and help them navigate things, watch what's going on, give them tips, give them clues what to do for the safety of the driving the bus, for the safety of the students.
And riding the bus is a privilege. My last district that I worked in, parents actually had to pay for their children to ride the bus, which I'd never seen before. You know, unless you are a student with a disability that has transportation as a related service, that bus ride is a privilege.
We work closely with the schools. We work closely with the district office here. It's a privilege and not a right kind of thing.
We want kids in school.
Yeah, and so you want kids in school. So you're always feel like you're kind of in this squeeze. And and I understand that. I mean, we really are trying to get students educated, and we feel like being on the bus is part of the educational process. I have drivers that I talk with frequently, and I say, you know, you're the first smile that some of these kids may ever see in a morning. Yeah. And, you know, how they deal with that is how the kids start their day.
I don't know if you're doing this at all elementaries. I know this is happening at Stillwater. They're doing some bus retraining.
Right.
So when students aren't being successful on the bus, they are required to do this retraining. Can you talk about that?
It's basically just kind of going through a 10 or 15 minute reorientation to here's the bus rules, here's what you need to do, and et cetera. And it works.
What is the most important thing that you would love parents to know?
Yeah, I would say we really need parents to be engaged in what's going on the bus. So drivers, what they would really like to have is be able to ride and drive the bus when it's safe. If parents can help us with that, still in their students, that's an important thing. Maybe at times even reinforce with their students, keeping them safe, what we're trying to do will also help as well. So when parents get involved in a positive way, it oftentimes will help. Trust that we really are trying to do our job and get the students to school safely and to drive the bus safely.
If a parent had a concern about something that was happening on the bus, who should they reach out to?
Yeah, basically they can reach out to the driver would be the first place. If they're not, they can call our office, the transportation office, and either myself, one of us in the office will take that, and we usually get information, then we pull the tape out of the bus. We got audio and video. It's pretty clear what's going on. Literally was viewing one before I came here, and the video did not support it at all. It doesn't mean we're discounting. It may mean we need to pay attention and monitor, but we can't just take it at face value because video didn't support that.
Steve, despite the challenges, our drivers are a pretty happy group that love what they do. Mm-hmm. If someone was interested, and I know you're always looking for drivers, could you talk a little bit about how they could learn more about that?
So, two things. One, being a bus driver, I would say the majority of the bus drivers that I have are there because they absolutely love making a difference in kids' lives. What I envision is that we provide positive and enriching environment for students and for anybody that we work with, parents, team members, drivers. Really, they're there because it's not just a paycheck. They are there because they care about kids. They enjoy what their job. Some of these drivers are, they're trying to get to know the kids. They're trying to talk to mom or guardian calls and says, you know, your driver name, what a great job. And I mean, we had a really tough situation a couple weeks ago, and the parents couldn't have been any more positive about how the driver handled it. I tell the drivers, you are the first smiling face that these students sometimes will see, and how they enter the bus could totally affect how they spend the rest of their day. And I think the majority of them take that very seriously. They really care. And the way the kids treat them, the parents are kind to them and those kind of things. And sometimes all it takes is one card, one note of positive, and it makes their whole day. I think anything that people can do to encourage the drivers, they are there because they care. They're not there just for a paycheck. They're there because they care. You know, training is involved. It takes about 2 weeks, 4 weeks of training, depending on how we set it up. To drive, you have to get your permit to drive for CDL, Class BC license. And then you go start into the training. The book work takes approximately 6 days of time to go through.
Help them through all
we
that.
We have a driver trainer. We have driver trainers on site and train them. And then, of course, that includes both the book work, being able to get their license, and then all the training. And, of course, to pass their license, there's actually a driving portion as well as a test portion. So they actually have to go with an endorsed person to get their driving segment of their license taken care of. Once that's done, then you have your Class B or C, whichever you apply for, and then you're able to drive the bus. Where historically our training has kind of taken place over a longer period of time, we're trying to shorten it up so it's a little faster. We pay for driving and we pay for drivers while they're in training. It's actually a benefit of probably between $6,000 and $10,000 to a driver who is actually trained and ultimately gets their license to go through the process.
Steve, thank you so much for giving us some insight into the wonderful world of school district transportation. Yeah. So thank you for being here. I appreciate it. And remember to join us next week when we continue our conversations about all things education.